Hi, I'm Elsie Escobar. I work at the intersection of voice-led leadership and podcasting, helping creators and organizations build content ecosystems that are aligned, sustainable, and human-centered. This is Into the Podverse with Tony Doe.
Innovations, challenges, and opportunities in podcasting. This is Into the Podverse. I'm Tony Doe. Welcome to the show. You just closed one of the longest and most influential chapters in podcasting history. 18 years at Libsyn. When you look back, what's the single biggest shift in the industry you've witnessed from the inside that most people still don't fully grasp?
Okay, when I look back, the single biggest shift, the one that I think we're not fully grasping, is the definition of what a podcast is. It's a cultural vocabulary issue. And listen, I know it's a hot button and I'm not here to opine over what is a podcast, but just name what's going on. Think of it like the word quesadilla. If you order a quesadilla in Mexico or here in the US for the most part, you expect tortillas with melted cheese, right? And because quesadillas were created in Mexico, that's where they came from. And that's what most people know is tortillas, melted cheese inside. That's what you have it. But in El Salvador, which is where I'm from, a quesadilla is completely different. It's like a sweet pound cake. It's kind of like a very moist corn bread, sweet bread, more like the pastry that you have with coffee. That's what I grew up understanding to be a quesadilla. And it's, you know, it's in queso means cheese. So both of these things are made of cheese. Same word, two totally different things, yet they do have some things in common, like cheese. Now, this is kind of what's happening in podcasting. You have a new generation entering the space. Like, think about it from like post 2022 is what I would say, who think podcasting is the melted cheese version of a quesadilla, kind of like video. Okay. So YouTube, Spotify for creators with the video of it all of that stuff. But then you have those of us who have been around for a long time who know podcasting as the El Salvador pound cake of it all, right? It's a little different. That's a little like rooted deeply in the RSS feed delivery mechanism. The biggest shift isn't really the technology so much as it is the conflation of terms. You can have someone recording a video, you know, on their phone for YouTube and publishing it, and that's a podcast. You can have Netflix or Hulu producing really high-end shows of what you would imagine they're like talk shows, right? They're seated. They are behind-the-scenes stuff happening with some of the main leads of a show that is available within Netflix and or Hulu, wherever the platform is. And then they also have an audio feed, and that's a podcast. And a lot of people might just know that to be a podcast. And then you have the OG creators, right, that are focused on RSS. So when we talk about podcasting now, not only when we talk about podcasting with each other as peers, but when we are just talking out in the world about podcasting, or when we are trying to get business and work within the space, we have to be very explicit about what we're actually taught, what everybody in the room at that moment is really talking about. Are we talking about video? Are you talking about the Netflix of it all, right? Are you talking about that part? Is it audio storytelling? Is it narrative work? Because the skill sets required for each of those things are completely different. And sometimes they do have the same sort of core skill sets that you can move from one thing to the other. Absolutely. You can definitely do that. And some of them, you don't, right? You can be a genius at a video podcast and you know exactly how to use all of the everything that you need in terms of the video production of something. You understand how to produce that type of a show where two people are seated in front of a couch and or tape chairs or whatever, everything that you see there, the lighting, all the things, and not know how to craft an audio first narrative and vice versa, right? That's a shift. The word podcast now covers so many different layers. And if you want to succeed, you have to be very clear about which which quesadilla you're actually making and or which quesadilla you're actually talking about. Because wouldn't it suck if you were waiting to get your quesadilla and it's like, you know, you want an El Salvadorian quesadilla and they give you the tortillas with the cheese in the middle, and that's what you get, which was my biggest heartbreak when I moved to this country when I ordered one.
Libsyn was a quiet backbone for hundreds of shows. Now that you're on the other side of the curtain, what's one myth about podcast hosting or distribution that you're finally free to bust wide open?
Oh, am I going to get in trouble for this overall? No, this is not. This is no shade to anybody, right? But this is what I'm feeling. Podcast hosting platforms are not as important as they used to be. It's really hard for me to say that, actually. But strictly as a delivery mechanism for an RSS feed, I'm just saying that. There's very little difference between them. In fact, paying for just audio or media hosting in this realm often feels like a little superfluous sometimes. If all you need is an RSS feed, you can get that for free from places like, from podcast hosting platforms like RSS.com. or Spotify for Creators, and they do a very decent job, especially RSS.com. They have a great ethos. They're offering something amazing that is just so not complex, but it's just robust. It's such a robust offering that you get for free that I can't see for the everyday type podcaster to come into the scene now and not using it for free. Now, I used to believe that you needed to pay for hosting just to exist and to make sure that your thing isn't going to go away. I'm not 100% about that anymore or into that anymore. I'm kind of a little bit more lenient about it, that you don't need to pay for podcast hosting. Now, what you are paying for now is the integration of the tools to build your business with your podcast hosting platform of choice. So you pay for the ability for you to dynamically add ad insertion to your own feed so that you can promote things you want to promote. You are paying for private podcast capabilities. You are paying for robust, maybe deeper types of data or insight. You are paying for the ability to add programmatic ads if you have, especially like a massive back catalog and, you know, you have a large downloads and you're willing, and that's what you're looking for. You know, you can choose a host like Captivate or Transistor FM because they offer very specific tools that solve very specific problems for your creator business model. That for things, they've got the stuff that you need in order to make your idea work. And all of those bits and pieces are something you stand behind. There's something about that that you really, you're like, yeah, this is exactly what I need. But most new podcasters, and I'm talking about the super green ones that are, you know, stepping in and don't really have an idea exactly how they want to do the thing, but they have a dream and they have a mic and they just want to do the thing. They don't really quite know what they want to build yet. They might be having ideas of like becoming rich and famous, but they don't quite understand anything else. And so they sign up for hosting thinking it's some kind of magic bullet, but if you don't have a clear strategy around what you need from a podcast hosting platform, at this point, I don't view that there's a reason to pay for it. It is really easy to shift from podcast hosting platform to podcast hosting platform. It's integral to the industry, and it's easy to do. So I don't think that you have to start paying for it, especially if you don't have the resources, the income at that time. And I don't want anybody right now to push back and say, you should be able to afford $10 a month or $12 a month. Listen, there are some people who literally cannot do that. There's organizations that are that cannot do that. There's also many other things that you need to pay for. That you need to pay for in order to help you keep podcasting. So, but literally, you could honestly hand code an RSS feed yourself if you wanted to. Now, I'm not suggesting that you do that, but you could. The industry has shifted. And hosting as a standalone business, just for podcast hosting, just that's it. Hosting media files, audio media, audio, video, or PDFs, which is, you know, most podcast hosting platforms, a lot of them don't really host all the things, but just as a media hosting standalone business is dying. The real value is in the ecosystem the podcast hosting platform provides to help you grow. If a host isn't giving you those specific tools to monetize or build community or integrate with your existing systems or try to do the things that the podcasters are asking for, the creator economy is asking for, save your money and use it for tools that actually help you create, like some, you know, editing tools, some AI editing software. It might behoove somebody to invest in Descript to be able to help them easily edit a show than for podcast hosting. You have to weigh where you get the most value to keep your show moving forward, iterating and growing from it. Now, I'm also a mission-driven girly. I align with platforms that reflect my ethos. And you can see what the ethos of podcast hosting platforms are by the language that they use on their website, the actions that they take, what they invest in, and where they show up for the community. Pay attention to that. If you lead from values. Now I'll finish with this. I did say you don't need to pay for podcast hosting, but I do believe that we as a podcaster community must invest in the tools and services that we value. There is no world where innovation and support for the podcasting community overall and creators overall, and to create the world that we want, we can just step back and just take everything that just comes our way without giving back. Everybody in this community are human beings that are building businesses and want to build an industry that supports and continues to grow and continues to build off of each other and continues to build for each other. And so investing in the tools you want to continue to exist is imperative for a healthy ecosystem. Shout out to the companies and the platforms that help you do your work, right? So you shout them out and you give them money. Invest in them.
You've been one of the loudest voices for parity and representation, especially for women and BIPOC creators, since before it became trendy. As we get into 2026, where do you see the remaining gaps, and where are we actually making meaningful progress?
Okay, so I have, you know, always led from a place of parity in the space, even before it was trendy, my friend. And looking at where we are now, the biggest gap is that we often, this is what I feel, mind you, that we often confuse visibility with discoverability and what that means for us. They aren't the same thing. Now, visibility is an industry problem. It's structural. It's about who gets placed on the shelf by the platforms, like where they're facing forward, right? Also, who people invest in, who is seen easier than others. Discoverability, on the other hand, is a human thing. It's about curiosity. It's that feeling of finding a hidden gem because someone you trust told you about it, right? The industry right now is obsessed with visibility because they are leaning heavily into advertising support that chases volume because volume equals a lot of money, more, 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 right? They want massive reach, like those fancy shows, or actually like the Joe Rogans of the world, right? But those are outliers. Those are outliers. In fact, he is an outlier. That belief is really hard to combat. It is for sure capitalist. Value comes with the biggest, the most, and it's about tangible numbers, as in a lot of them. And if the numbers go down, watch out, you're a loser. And you need to then do everything in your power to continue more, 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 more. So where is the meaningful progress? It's in realizing that discoverability is solved by community. It works because of collective participation. It's like finding that hidden coffee shop behind, you know, two houses that only the locals know about. You find it because the people tell you it's there. We don't need to play the volume game. And BIPOC creators and underrepresented voices have always been the innovators because we lead with that human connection. We lead with community. We rally people. Meaningful progress isn't just about having one giant, you know, BIPOC superstar. It's about building solvent businesses that feed our families. It's about having a directory that isn't biased by algorithms. It's about having diverse leadership inside the big companies like, you know, the Spotify's, the Apple Podcasts, the iHearts. We need advocates in all of those verticals, like the, you know, the visibility end of things and the discoverability end of things. Tech, community, content and leadership. And honestly, we need more people actually doing the work rather than pontificating about the problems. The real progress is happening with the workers who are moving the needle when nobody is watching. And of course, we do need to address visibility, which is a job of the industry. And it is led by advocates on the inside. And it's led by the infrastructure, building with intentionality within apps, within directories, within websites, within features, within who we highlight, within speakers, within, there's just so much as it pertains to the industry that needs to curate that visibility in order for to have those eyes on those people and those voices. And discoverability, which we are responsible for. We the people, the ones that tell other people about work that matters in all the ways that are possible. It's on us too. We don't wait for somebody else to create something for us in order for us to discover each other. Everyone needs to be participating in all of this. We all need to be discovered by the right people, and each one of us can play a role in doing that for others. So we do take that responsibility. But again, there are advocates in those larger organizations that need to continue to carry the torch of visibility everywhere.
You co-founded She Podcasts a decade ago when women in podcasting groups barely existed. If you were starting She Podcasts from scratch today, what would you do completely differently in this creator economy?
If I were starting She Podcasts from scratch today, oh my gosh, I would get extremely clear on exactly who I am serving. Back then, it was enough to really just be a space for women and non-binary people. It was a broad identity-based gathering, right? That's what it was. But today, that's not enough. You have to be more prescriptive. Are you serving hobbyists? Are you serving business owners? Are you serving narrative storytellers? Are you serving the new wave of video producers? When you start a community now, it's usually need-based. People come in to solve a specific problem, like, how do I start a podcast? So in She Podcasts, we solve that problem for thousands of people. But the issue with need-based communities is that once that problem is solved, right, people leave. They get the answer and then they go. If I did it again, I would realize that building a community is really like building a business. It requires, I think the biggest thing that I believe is important in building a community is moderation. Moderation is one of the key components that a lot of folks don't even think about. And creating a safe space for people when they step in. Like, what are the kinds of conversations that you'll be having? Engagement is the next one. How to engage people in a way that it's additive, that brings value to their lives and to each other. And time. Time is something you need to be doing when you are building a community, because the community is reflective of the energy of the leadership. And if the leadership is outsourced, the community suffers a lot and culture does not move forward. Now, people right now are both yearning for community and are burnt out on online communities. They want the value of communities when they need it, but they aren't willing to invest time when they don't. And I'm not making anybody feel bad about that. That's just the truth. We're all tapped out. So as a leader, you have to provide value for those who show up, right? While inspiring others that are in the community to see why it matters to show up in the community, even if you don't at that time need anything. And I would lead strictly from mission, vision, and values, and be very clear about the expectations for both the participants and the leaders from the get-go, as well as outlining some kind of business structure, either from the beginning and or how I see it in the future.
You've worn every hat: host, producer, community builder, corporate spokesperson, and now fractional strategist. Which of these roles taught you the thing you now consider your superpower when working with creators or companies?
Okay, so out of all of that stuff, I would say it's definitely a combination of community builder and strategist. My superpower is understanding the human element of podcasting. The embodied experience of the listener, the audience, right? I'm still obsessed with the medium. I'm a fangirl through and through. I understand what it feels like to be deeply connected to a creator. A creator is, wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm obsessed. That bird's eye view allows me to see patterns that others miss. I see how people are shifting their consumption habits, which is something we must keep an eye out. How are human beings consuming content? How are they doing it within their life? Because human beings are moving targets. We are in a multimodal world now. We can't pigeonhole ourselves to just one format. And you have to understand the psychology of how people are consuming content and incorporating it into their lives. So as we move into the world dominated by really artificial intelligence, right, I can see that the human voice is still the thing that leads. It's what drives action. So my strategy work is all about building ecosystems that honor that humanity while navigating these new tech realities, because we cannot stay doing the same stuff. It's about championing the human voice to guide a better tomorrow. And that's just something that I'm here for all day, every day. And I'm not just talking to creators here. I'm here to talk to the platforms and services within podcasting, because getting the word out about your product and service is so much different than it used to be in so many different ways. And sometimes you just need someone to come in and see what's going on. Where are you missing the mark? And at minimum, steer you in the right direction of how to connect with your audience.
You've been the public face of the feed, Libsyn's official podcast, for over 250 episodes. What's one story or guest moment from those 12 plus years that still makes you laugh or tear up when you think about it?
Okay, honestly, what makes me tear up now is realizing how much of myself I invested in a show that wasn't mine. I spent over 12 years and thousands of hours producing that show. I poured my heart, my personality, and my voice into it. And looking back, it hurts a little to know that I built that asset for our company, and ultimately, it didn't belong to me. This isn't a knock on the company. It's just the reality of corporate IP. But at that time, I didn't know that. I was so naive. And I'm not saying that I thought I was going to be able to take the show with me. That's not what that was. It was just a misalignment inside my heart, because podcasting is inherently personal. I wouldn't do that again. I wouldn't do that again. To center myself so deeply in a corporate podcast? No. Unless I owned the IP, could take it with me, or was compensated very differently as that host, as the producer. Yeah. I love serving the community, and I am so proud of the work. But I have learned that my voice and my essence deserve to be mine. And I'm claiming that for myself now. The end.
AI tools for scripting, editing, and even synthetic voices are everywhere now. as someone who's always championed the human element and yoga mindfulness in creating, where do you draw the line, or do you see AI as a net positive for indie creators?
I actually see AI as a massive positive, especially as a translation tool. My brain works really fast. I'm intuitive, I'm organic, and constantly sparking with ideas, but sometimes I struggle to organize those ideas into linear communication that others can understand. AI has helped me bridge that gap. It allows my brain to have a sense of structure after I dump my stuff out. It helps me structure my thoughts and create frameworks and communicate my vision without me having to reinvent the wheel every time, which is kind of what I had been doing a lot of the time. So it just becomes like a touch base with my own self. It's kind of like a little reminder going off. I use AI for scripting, especially my teachings, especially the things that I teach over and over and over and over again. And I realize that sometimes I tend to go away from the actual lesson that I'm trying to teach. So it helps me bring it down. For research, of course, when I'm doing a ton of research in a variety of different modalities to figure out solutions to a problem that I'm very specifically trying to find. And one of the things that really helps me with some of that research is just to have the synthetic voices that are kind of present within a lot of the AI read me those documents back, because those documents are so dense and it's very hard for my brain to just stay looking at a Google Doc. My brain will just go away. So I process information so much better with my ears, and I can move around and then come back to the document and highlight it or adjust it or take notes or make notes or go further into a conversation with my research because I'm listening to it, right? So I have AI read it, and it's been a game changer for being able to do stuff like that for me. But here's where I draw the line. AI cannot replace the embodied human, right? The person that's living. It can't replace the person standing on a stage and delivering a keynote. You can't get somebody behind a microphone and not sense the emotion and or the passion of somebody's voice. Or even just like moving body, like basic things like fixing a sink with the like tools, understanding how to crochet, having that real-time emotional conversation with another human where you are truly communicating and experiencing something. Like, it just makes me feel like, good Lord, being able to watch an actor on stage go through, like on actual theater, like a theatrical stage, experience something and what it does for you when you're there. You can see that often too with concerts and musicians with their instruments. Like, those kinds of things are, I don't believe you could just have AI just do it. The content landscape will get diluted, though. It is already happening with all the synthetic stuff. It's totally happening, sure. But the people who will, and I'm using air quotes here, who will win are the ones who can show up in real life in their bodies and connect and do the work. Because if you're given a microphone and you have to do or deliver an impromptu something or other, and you don't really know what you're saying because you've been using AI and you don't even know how to put those thoughts together in a cohesive manner, when push comes to shove, you're not going to win. That clarity isn't going to be there. Robots are getting really great at reading, but they can't be.
You've mentored hundreds of podcasters privately and publicly. What's the most common blind spot you see from creators who've been in the game 5 to 10 years and suddenly feel stuck or left behind?
to me, it's like, okay, it's like owning a house for 20 plus years or something, right? You might now have the newest, fastest router. But if the wiring in the walls is 20 years old, you're not going to get that speed. It's just not going to work. Many veteran podcasters are really, they're stuck on the content hamster wheel, as in like this, and from two separate ways, in the sense that there's a momentum moving forward and you're doing it because you've always done it. There's that side of it, right? And it's getting you enough. It's getting you enough. And then there's the other layer of it, which is the you're too overwhelmed to kind of step back to look at things. And there's also the inertia of having to, it's like an ego thing. You're kind of stuck. You're stuck in wanting things to stay the same. Because a lot of veteran podcasters know how to put out a weekly show with their eyes closed. And they just keep doing it, right? But they haven't really stopped to examine the wheel itself, the wheel itself. They haven't updated their strategy for audience acquisition. Because we're getting to a place now that a lot of audiences are, I'm using a corporate term in terms of the churn, that like they're churning out of your podcast, but they're not doing it because your podcast isn't good. It's just that they've aged out. Like there's some folks who simply aren't interested in that conversation anymore, that they're not vibing with it. They're getting older. Their whole everything is shifting, right? From five or 10 years ago, you didn't really have to worry about churning audiences too much. People stayed subscribed forever. Now audiences are turning over. You are no longer for them. And that's okay. That's okay because of the length of time. But you need a strategy to find new people. You can't just rely on the feed. The feed anymore, just your podcast's RSS feed anymore, the publishing. You have to be visible in other ways, use other media, or be explicit about what your show is. The blind spot is thinking that what worked in like, you know, pre-2018 will keep working today without renovation, without you having to look at it again. And there is an element of bias for creators that have been around for a long time. It's harder to pivot. There's such resistance to letting go of what was deserves to be recognized, but it cannot be unyielding. The power of our voice is in the fluid nature of our messages to reach our people where they are. When we move from a place of, I know all the things, we disconnect from the pulse of possibilities and any kind of innovation.
Having been inside one of the biggest hosting platforms during the YouTube podcast explosion, Spotify's video push, and now TikTok, Instagram audio experiments, what do you predict the consumption landscape looks like in 2030? And how should creators future-proof themselves?
To future-proof yourself for 2030, you need to look at your life, not just your tech. Let's say if you're 35 now, you'll be 40 in 2030, 2031. That is a massive shift physically, hormonally, professionally. The hustle you have now might not be sustainable then. You need to ask, do I want to be the face, and I'm using quotation marks here, the face of this brand forever, of this show forever? Do I want a business that lives or dies based on my daily authenticity and presence within it? we're seeing a shift where media companies rely entirely on the personal brand of the creator. And that is both as independent media creators, and this is also true for like larger organizations and larger brands. That is exhausting. Future-proofing means deciding now what you want to keep private. You curate your visibility. I'm going to just say that one more time because you really, I think that this is imperative for anybody starting out. You need to curate your visibility. Decide what is for the public and what is for you. You need to build a foundation that allows you to step back if you need to. You build a life that isn't entirely attached to the online world, because real sustainability is about going back to our bodies and our real lives, not just optimizing for the next app or the next platform and tying your life to a small screen, because who in the world wants that? And I can tell you from experience that the older you get, the least that you want that to be you. Your life, it does not work. It simply does not align.
You've talked about burnout, being a mom in tech, and finding balance. After stepping away from the corporate role, what does sustainable success look like for Elsie Escobar in the next chapter? And what permission do you hope to give other longtime creators who are scared to make a similar leap?
I'm in the thick of it right now. For me, sustainable success means building with an exit in mind. In my early 50s, or I am in my early, let me say that again. I'm in my early 50s. I want to exit in 10 years. I'm not here to grind until I drop. I want to build something that supports the life I actually want to live. Not just the, you know, like a picket fence type of fantasy, but the day-to-day reality of actual living. As in, how am I sleeping? Having the luxury of being able to wake up at 6 a.m. or 8 just because, and when I wake up to just stay in bed if I want to, what am I eating? Being able to adjust my diet based on what my body needs without thinking about how much a can of beans is costing or where I'm going to get a bag full of rice. Things like, am I getting sunshine? Having the privilege of being able to go outside and get sunshine at 3 p.m. and just take a, like, walk around a little bit and feel good in a place that is, you know, the air is clean. Am I present with my family? Oh my God. Being able to be okay if my child needs me and I don't have to be like, I'm sorry, I got to get on a meeting. And to understand that I'm able to do all of those things, that's what I'm talking about. I want to give creators permission to understand that life is seasonal overall, for you to understand that you cannot do it all at once. There is no world where you are the perfect parent, the perfect CEO, the perfect partner, and the fittest person alive all in this at the same exact time. Something always takes a back seat. Something always does. I remember, you know, I had to give up my own podcast when I became a mom because I physically couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't. And yeah, I missed a lot of opportunities, a lot at that time. And that makes me sad sometimes, but also it was necessary. That's just part of being an adult. It's part of choosing my children, my babies, the ones that I made. And I would do it again. If you're scared to make a leap because you don't have a financial cushion or generational wealth, that is totally valid. sometimes you're going to be pushed to do that. And that's also quite scary because the systems we live in aren't really built for dreamers or creatives and without a safety net. And there, again, some systemic structures that aren't necessarily even based on gender or race. Sometimes it's a cultural thing. Sometimes it's an educational access to information that is lacking. Yeah, it's okay to be afraid. But if you are there, just take it breath by breath. Find your community. Collective support is the only way we move forward. And when I say collective support, I mean actual human conversation, not just like going on to a Facebook group or Reddit thread or whatevs. Making phone calls, talk to other humans that are just going to listen to you. Sustainable success is just doing the best that you can. Minute by minute, without destroying yourself in the process, without burning yourself out, because we need you.
I hope today's episode sparked some ideas, tackled the challenge, or opened your eyes to a new opportunity. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review. Your support helps keep this conversation going. And if you've got thoughts or stories of your own, then please reach out to me at Tony Doe Media on social media. I'd love to hear them. Until next time, keep innovating, growing, and chasing those opportunities. Chat again soon.